Good morning. This is hour number two of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal. Kyle Mabry is at the controls. And in this part of the show, we'll be talking about Haiti, trying to get caught up on what has happened in that country recently. It is the poorest country in the Americas. It ranks among the lowest on measures of human development. More than half of the population lives on less than a dollar a day. Increasing food prices have led there recently to violent protests. In this hour, we'll try to talk a little bit about why it is that political stability has been so elusive and look at what wealthy nations like the United States might be able to do to help. And our guest for the program is Robert Fauton. He is the Julia A. Cooper Professor of Government and Foreign Affairs in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. He's authored a number of books about Haiti, including Haiti's Predatory Republic, The Unending Transition to Democracy. This was a book that was published in 2002, and also another book titled The Roots of Haitian Despotism, published in 2007. He was born and raised in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, has spent a lot of his college years in Indiana. He has his PhD from Notre Dame, and he's been teaching at University of Virginia since 1981. He's been good enough to give us some of his time this morning, and we appreciate that. He's joining us by phone. Questions from people who are listening are certainly welcome, and there we just ask people to try to keep their questions and comments brief so that we can keep our program moving along and get in as many callers as possible. Questions are certainly, though, welcome from listeners. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the number to call. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. And that is 800-222-9455. So if you would happen to be listening over the air around Illinois and Indiana, or if you're listening on the internet in the United States, you can use that toll-free line. Again, it's 800-222-9455. And here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That is the number. Professor Fauton, hello.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you very much for talking with us today.
I'm very pleased to be here.
We appreciate it. It seems to me this is a subject that we try to touch on from time to time, and I forgive me for beginning on such a negative note, but it seems to me that every time we do, I find myself thinking, could things possibly get worse? And somehow they continue to get worse, at least as far as living conditions for most of the people of Haiti go.
Yes, unfortunately, when Haiti is in the news, it's for the bad news. And in the last few years, we've had indeed many bad news. We've had the coups and counter-coups. We've had the removal of civilian regimes by the military. We've had an intervention by the United States in the mid-90s. We've had an intervention again from by the United States and the French in 2004, and then the more recently, the establishment of a peacekeeping force, the so-called MINUSTA, when President Aristide left the country after a period of significant turmoil.
And that's a United Nations peacekeeping effort.
Can you repeat that?
That's the United Nations. Just to make sure, that's the United Nations.
Yeah, once the French and the American troops left the country, there was a contingent, and it's now about 8,000 to 9,000 troops from Argentina, Brazil, Pakistan, and a few other countries, mainly from Brazil and Argentina, and some from Chile.
It certainly seems that there would have been a number of points where you would have reason for hope for things to be better at the end of the Duvalier time, when President Aristide was elected the first time, when he was restored to office after his long exile, perhaps recently when René Préval was elected in 2006. Somehow, though, those periods where you might find some reason to be optimistic always seem to be brief.
Well, indeed, and I think you need to put it in perspective. The country, as you said, is extremely poor. There is a terrible level of scarcity. And to a large degree, even after the departure of Duvalier in 1986, politics has been, to some extent, determined by the conquest of political power and the use of political power to accumulate the spoils of that power. And that didn't change till the election of Aristide from 1986 to 1990, the military were in fact the dominant institution. When Aristide came and was elected by an overwhelming majority of Haitians in December of 1990, and he took power eventually in February of 91, there was indeed a great amount of hope. But as we know, the problem in Haiti was also a problem that, to put it bluntly, is a problem of the have and the have-nots. And when Aristide was removed the first time, it is clear, at least in my mind, that what we had then was the military and the elite joining together against the popular movement and forcing Aristide out of power. Immediately after that, there was a series of military regimes which pretended to be dominated by civilian authorities, but they were civilian regimes. When Aristide came back in 1994, and that was one of the contradictions of Aristide, because if you remember, Aristide, when he was elected, was indeed some sort of a prophetic figure deeply rooted in the theology of liberation and looking at America as the great empire. And yet when he returned literally on the back of 20,000 Marines. So that started the process of cooperation, conflict with the United States, and as well as in Haiti. And I think there were certain major contradictions, because Aristide was preaching some sort of a radical departure from the past, but when he returned, he had to sign, and this is one of the consequences of that agreement, is the food crisis, but he had to sign an agreement with the IMF and the World Bank whereby the economy was going to be wide open to foreign investments and foreign corporations and foreign goods. And in the case of food production, that created a severe problem because prices were initially much cheaper, especially rice, which is subsidized by the United States. And the Haitian government had to open the economy and could not subsidize its own production, which meant that food production in Haiti just declined tremendously, and people who were involved in agricultural production found themselves out of jobs, and that has exacerbated the patterns of migration from the rural areas to the urban areas. And when people go to Port-au-Prince, well, there are no jobs. So you have a situation, in fact, which is really quite inviting to political chaos. You have a large proportion of population which is very young, and yet they have no job and no future. So there is a certain element of despair that has fueled, if you wish, the political crisis.
Well, that, and you've touched on something that I certainly wanted to talk about because it has been in the news recently, the fact that, as we have seen in many other places, there has been a significant increase in food prices, and that because people are so poor, led to widespread violent protests. And Haiti at one point actually was an exporter of food, at least rice and coffee. And yes, now the situation is that almost all of the Haiti's food actually has to be imported. And it, can one lay that to the door mostly of the fact that cheaper, there at least would have been a time when it would have been cheaper to import food to feed the Haitian people than it would be to grow it and produce it locally?
Yes, I mean, that was one of the issues, that initially rice came to Haiti and was cheaper than Haitian rice. The problem is that there is some sort of monopolistic control of the rice in Haiti, which means that once the local rice production went down and significantly, then the importers literally started to raise prices. So that's one issue. So the problem is rather complicated. It's not just the IMF and the World Bank, but they have a significant role in that crisis, because they opened up the economy. Haiti, actually, according to the IMF, is the most open economy in the Caribbean, and there has been very little results in terms of economic growth. The other problem is sheer governmental neglect of the agricultural areas of Haiti. Most of the plans of development, in spite of rhetoric, committing governmental funds to the rural sector. Well, most of the economic plans are essentially based on the development of an export enclave in Port-au-Prince. And that, in turn, is a situation that, in my mind, cannot lead to any type of self-sustaining development. More recently, immediately after the riots, President Préval has declared that it is now important to concentrate Haiti's energies and investment on the rural sector for local production. The question is whether the international community is going to support that kind of development and whether Haiti has the means, indeed, to carry out that project. But I think the developmental strategy that has been followed for the past 20 years has literally been a disaster. But there is also the fact that we've had political instability, which has further exacerbated the economic crisis. And the two feed on each other. Mm-hmm. So it's to some extent, a vicious circle.
Let me just quickly introduce again our guest, Robert Fatan. He is a professor of government and foreign affairs in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. And we're talking about recent developments in Haiti. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Something else that I have read about, at least just recently, is that apparently that there were some people, particularly people in the United States, who believed that the way to develop the economy of Haiti was to move away from this rural agricultural base and somehow take advantage of the fact that there are people who are willing to work for low wages and develop it into more of an industrial country. And in fact, in several stories that I read, the phrase that kept coming up was the Taiwan of the Caribbean. Is that something that you can talk about?
Well, this actually is very much the plan that existed when Jean-Claude Duvalier came to power in the 70s. The idea was indeed to use the cheap Haitian labor to export goods to the United States. And that in turn supposedly would have unleashed other processes in the economy which would have contributed to self-sustaining growth. The problem, however, is that when you follow that strategy, first you need a market that will allow you to send your goods. That's one issue. The second issue is that the type of development we are talking about, and we had it under Jean-Claude Duvalier, was to a large extent an enclave in Port-au-Prince next to the airport. Now, that contributed to some form of economic growth, but on the other hand, it was not linked to the development of the agricultural sector in Haiti, where the vast majority of the population is still residing. So one has to, on the one hand, be realistic that, indeed, the proximity of the American market is an important element in any economic strategy for Haiti. But on the other hand, one has also to think about how you link that kind of development with the development of agriculture and with the development of local industry. Because what we had was simply goods that were sent to Haiti and were assembled and then sent back to the United States. And that strategy is one that exacerbated the marginalization of the rural areas at the expenses of the urban areas. And the strategy ultimately failed with the departure of Jean-Claude Duvalier. And yet, it's very much the same thing that we are hearing again. And I think there needs to be a complete reassessment of that strategy, one that would emphasize both export, yes, but at the same time, significant investment in the local agricultural sector in Haiti. And finally, if you look at the Caribbean, it's a real problem for Haiti because Haiti's infrastructure is virtually in total disrepair, which means that even if you want to invest in Haiti, there is no electricity, there is very little communication between the different areas because we have very bad roads. So you're dealing with an infrastructure which probably cannot sustain the development of an industry. So you have a series of problems that compound Haiti's predicament.
We have a couple of callers here to bring into the conversation. Let's do that. And we'll start with a listener in Urbana, and this is line one. Hello.
Good morning, Professor Pouwan. If you'd be such a good fellow, could you give us a thumbnail history of the jewel of the Caribbean, the island of Hispaniola, and how it became so impoverished, and old Toussaint Louverture and its colonial background? I mean, it was just the richest island in the Caribbean. So thank you very much if you could do that. Bye.
Yes, let me try to do that. It's a very long and complicated history, but basically during the colonial period, Haiti faced French colonialism, and at the time, Haiti was indeed the largest producer of sugar. And not surprisingly, the economy was based on slavery on the plantation system, which meant that even when Haiti was doing well, as it were, from a pure economic perspective, you had a huge proportion of the population which was marginalized and exploited. That exploitation led to the Haitian Revolution in 1804, when slaves led by Toussaint Louverture and then Jean-Jacques Dessalines decided that they were no longer going to put up with being the victims of that system. So the Haitian Revolution ultimately forced Napoleon's army to exit Haiti, and Haiti became an independent nation. But once Haiti became an independent nation, you had a series of domestic and external problems that have never been totally resolved, even now. Domestically, what you had as a result of the revolution was a devastated economy. And one of the problems was that Haiti was dependent, indeed, on sugar export if the economy was to be back on its feet. But if you concentrated on sugar, you needed again to reestablish the plantation economy, which meant that you would have needed to use essentially slave labor, which obviously was no longer a possibility because the revolution was made in the name of freedom for the slaves. So that became a real problem domestically. Then we had also class problems, and we had problems of race, which compounded those matters. And externally, for a very long time, Haiti faced the boycott of the international community. One has to remember that in the 1800s, the dominant powers were essentially white supremacist powers, and they did not want to see the Haitian example spread throughout the other colonies. So Haiti was pushed aside, marginalized. And ultimately, what you had was a rather paradoxical situation. The French government decided to recognize Haiti, but Haiti had to pay to be recognized. And Haiti accumulated a huge debt vis-à-vis the French, and it contributed to significant economic problems, because Haiti, if repay the debt, it would have probably faced another occupation. So we've had a series of economic problems, social problems, and racial problems from the very beginning. And those problems were compounded by the international constellation of power. Haiti finally, after paying the debt, started to put its house together. But again, we have a tradition, as I've said, of predatory politics. That is to say, the country is rather poor. Politics becomes a business. People are elected or they take power for their own personal benefits. The next century, in the 20th century, as we know, there were a series of unstable governments, and the United States essentially invaded Haiti and occupied the country from 1915 to 1934. The occupation was one that was very resented by the Haitian population. The American troops were considered to be imperial troops, and they were considered also to be very racist. There was some development on the part of the United States, but the U.S. left, paradoxically, a very authoritarian legacy. It is under the American occupation that the Haitian military really crystallized. And the Haitian military became a key institution in Haitian politics, and a very authoritarian one and a despotic one. And that, in turn, meant that our politics would continue to be based on dictatorial norms. So you have a series of events leading eventually to the coming to power of Duvalier. And Duvalier knew that if he wanted to stay in power, he had to neutralize the army. So Duvalier created the Makout, a paramilitary group that really terrorized the Haitian population, especially under François Duvalier. And we had a period of utter economic neglect. When Father Duvalier, François Duvalier, died, the son, he was barely 18, 19 when he assumed power, decided to embark on the modernization of the country. And this is where we have the same strategy that we are talking about. Create an export enclave, try to develop the country, etc., that way without really integrating the rural areas into that development. Jean-Claude Duvalier liberalized to some extent the system, but the regime remained totally corrupt, and it eventually was removed by Haitian, the Haitian population, who forced Duvalier to exit. The problem, however, is that when Duvalier exited, he left in place some sort of military dictatorship. And we've had to live with that up till 94, 95, when the army was essentially made illegal by Aristide. And yet, we do know that in 2000, many of the insurgents against Aristide were also members of the army. So you have had the situation where both domestically and internationally, the conditions for Haiti's development and for the ushering in of some sort of democratic practice, well, those things, those conditions have really been such that it's been extremely difficult to exit from the current predicament. Hmm.
It certainly seems, though, that what we see is a fairly consistent pattern, at least in the 20th century, of this this persistent and dramatic gulf between the vast majority of Haitians who are very poor and the small number at the top who are quite wealthy, and they and their the people who support them and maintain them are interested in making sure that nothing changes.
Yes, we have a huge divide. It is a real chasm between the few and the many. At one point, there was the beginning of some sort of intermediate class, but in the last 30 years or so, the economic conditions have been such that even that group is starting to feel completely marginalized. And that is also a reason for the political instability and the chaos in Haiti.
We have another caller here. Let's get to them. And this is someone who is in Champagne, and this would be line number two. Hello.
Yes, I think I'm going to segue into what the professor said. I've read several books by former president of, I believe, TransAfrica, Randall Robinson. And he his thesis is that one of the problems for Haiti is that after the rebellion, this first and I guess only African slave rebellion in the Western Hemisphere, that France, and of course he puts a lot of the blame at the feet of the United States, have never forgiven Haiti for that. And a number of the economic and political ills of Haiti to this very day is a function of the vindictive actions of the United States, including most recently, and I do believe he keeps putting a lot of emphasis on this, the way the United States treated former President Aristide, who I think is in exile maybe in South Africa. How would you comment to that thesis of Professor Randall Robinson?
Well, I think there is no doubt that the international community has been more of a problem than of help to Haiti from the very beginning up till now. On the other hand, I think we need also to look at the Haitian domestic situation. I think it's a combination of both. I would emphasize the role of the United States, the French, yes, but I would emphasize also the role of Haitian elites. which has been rather detrimental to the development of the country. So while the international system has indeed had a negative impact on the development of Haiti, this is only one part of the picture. The other part of the picture are the different Haitian governments that we've had. And Haitians have to also assume responsibility for the domestic side of things, even though, as you said, when we've had domestic regimes which have attempted to transform the country, they have faced, indeed, the opposition of the French and the U.S. So it's a complicated situation, but I think you're right to emphasize the international constellation of power, but at the same time one has to look also at what Haitians themselves, in particular the political and the economic elite, have done to the country.
One last question. What touched me very significantly about Haiti, even before I read in depth about their economic and political upheavals, is how when Haitians have tried to leave that situation and come to the United States, unlike Cubans, I think the United States government has turned Haitians refugees around, even when many of them have died, and sent them back to persecution, or what we thought would be persecution, into Haiti. That really has caused me to feel that, and I know the immigration policy of this country is discriminatory, but I really felt, since the Haitians were in this hemisphere, just like the Cubans, why were the Haitians treated so differently?
Well, this is a very interesting issue, because it's not just that Haitians are treated very differently from the Cubans, but Haiti and the United States have an agreement whereby if the American Navy does seize Haitians on the high seas, that they return them immediately to Haiti, irrespective of the situation. So you're absolutely right. Haitians have received a very different treatment from that of the Cubans, and I think that's partly the legacy of the Cold War and partly the influence of the Cuban lobby in Florida.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you for the call. We are a bit past our midpoint. I would like to just very quickly again introduce our guest, Robert Fatin. He is professor of government and foreign affairs in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia, and has written a good deal about Haiti, its history, and its politics, including two recent books that I mentioned at the beginning, The Roots of Haitian Despotism, published last year, and also Haiti's Predatory Republic, The Unending Transition to Democracy. That book was published in 2002. He's been on the faculty of University of Virginia since 1981. He was born and raised in Port-au-Prince in Haiti. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And our next caller is in Champaign, and this is line number one. Hello.
This is maybe a question more for Mr. Inge. A few years ago, I was aware of a doctor in Champaign who would spend his vacations in Haiti, and I want to support him, but I no longer have his name. I wondered if you or any of our listeners would know who that is. And then my second question, I would like to support a grassroots Catholic missionary work that's being done in Haiti, and I don't have those addresses either. So if maybe our listeners or maybe our guest would have any idea of who I would write to or who I would get a hold of, and then maybe talk a little bit about the religious issues that are in Haiti as far as the population, what religion they practice, and how strong the church is there, et cetera. So I'll get off the phone just in case you can give me some addresses and names so I can write them down. Thank you very much.
Well, as far as the specific person that the caller is referring to, I cannot say. It's possible we could go back in our records and see what we could find. But maybe you would like to respond more generally to the caller's comments, either about the church or churches in Haiti, and then if someone was interested in contributing to some organization that was trying to do work in Haiti, what might you suggest?
Yes, actually, I don't know about the doctor in Illinois, but there is another doctor who has written extensively on Haiti by the name of Dr. Farmer, Paul Farmer, and he's done really remarkable work in Haiti. He has literally contributed to the building of a major hospital. He's been in the forefront of helping Haitian doctors to fight against AIDS, and it's someone, he really is someone who could indeed channel whatever resources you have to a very good cause. And I don't have his address with me now, but it would be fairly easy to get it because he's on the faculty at Harvard University in the medical school. In terms of the churches and religion in Haiti, Haiti is predominantly a country where most Haitians are what you might call vaudouisants. That is to say, they practice religion which is indigenous. It comes from Africa. It's a blend of different Western African religions. Having said so, however, most Haitians do not necessarily see the wall between that particular religion and the other religions, like Catholicism or Protestantism. And in fact, there has been in the last few years a significant increase in the number of evangelicals. And that, to some extent, is a function of the diaspora, the Haitian diaspora in the United States, and the work of missionaries in Haiti. The Catholic Church used to be the dominant church, and it's probably still the dominant church, but it is no longer as dominant as it used to be. But again, let me explain that even if you're a Catholic for the vast majority of Haitians, or you belong to a particular Protestant religion, that would not necessarily mean that you would have abandoned the roots of your Haitian religion. It's a very syncretic type of religion, voodoo. It cannot just adapt, and it's a very interesting phenomenon.
All right. I hope that gets at the caller's question. Let's talk again with someone else. This is someone in Champaign in line number one.
Hi. Yes. I was just calling to let you know that Dr. Farmer's organization is called Partners in Health, PIH. And I'm sure you can find them online. I'm not sure the exact web address, but they do work all over the world, but I'm sure you can also earmark funds for Haiti. So.
All right. Well, thanks. And I know just to hear, I'm sitting in front of my computer, and I just put his name into my web browser and got it a vast number of hits. So if people are interested in finding out information about him, certainly that there has been written about him, including one a book that Tracy Kidder wrote about him that came out in 2003 that I know got a lot of attention. So
yes.
It shouldn't be hard for people to find out information about him and his organization. So
yeah.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much. Again, questions are welcome. We have about 20 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 talking about Haiti. And once again, our guest for this hour is Robert Fatan. He is professor of government and foreign affairs in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. Here our number, if you'd like to join in on the conversation, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455.
I just wanted to mention another organization, and that organization was established by Wyclef Jean, the very well-known rapper. He's originally from Haiti, and he's established in Haiti the organization which is called Yele Haiti. And if you go to the web, you can find that organization. It's doing a very, very good job in terms of providing resources, in particular to the poorest people in the urban areas in Cité Soleil. Mm-hmm. And the organization is called Yele. It's Y-E-L-E. And finally, there's another organization which is started as a soccer organization, but has gotten way beyond that by a Haitian fellow by the name of Bobby Duval, who actually had been jailed and almost died in the jail of Duvalier, and he established Cité Soleil des Poor Slums in Haiti, an organization which was dedicated to bring young people into some productive venue. And since soccer is almost a religion in Haiti, he started doing that. And now you have about 6,000 people who are involved, and their families have to be fed, etc. So it's another very worthwhile organization led by the Haitian Bobby Duval. And if you go to Google, you'll find him again on Google.
All right, very good. Another caller here. This is someone from calling from Paris, Illinois. This is line number 4, our toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, hello. There was a lady called within the last half hour, and she asked about a physician from Champaign in Haiti. And there is a man, and I'm sorry, I can only give you his last name. His last name is Dobbins, D-O-B-B-I-N-S. And I think he has been in Haiti for a number of years, and to my knowledge, I think he is still there. He had a brother who practiced law in Champaign and retired a couple of years ago. But if you wanted to track down the name, I guess I would start with the lawyer Dobbins and backtrack from there.
Okay. Well, thanks for the suggestion. We appreciate that. Other calls are certainly welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. We were talking a little bit earlier. You talked about the Duvalier father and son, Francois and Jean-Claude, who ran the country essentially from the mid-50s until Jean-Claude left in 1986. He is still alive. He's living in France. Just recently, apparently, or recently as last fall, he made some comments that made it sound as if he thought he might actually go back to Haiti. And I know there are probably a lot of people in Haiti that would just be infuriated by such an idea. But apparently there are also a lot of people in Haiti that were born after he left, who might, I don't know, might they look favorably up on such a thing?
Well, it's a complicated business because during the period of Jean-Claude Duvalier, you had real political stability up till 84 or something like that, so for 13 years. But on the other hand, it was a stability which was, to a large extent, based on repression. So I think that if Duvalier were to go back, he would face a significant amount of opposition. On the other hand, given the instability in the country, there is indeed a segment of the population which has some nostalgia for stability and political order. But I would not exaggerate the number of people who would really welcome Jean-Claude Duvalier. It would be a very complicated thing for the government to deal with him. There, as we do know, he had accumulated a massive amount of money, ill-gotten money, and currently the Haitian government is trying to deal with the government of Switzerland to try to get back some of the money that was stolen. But it's a very long process.
Mm. Do you think that there is something at this point, something constructive that the United States or the industrialized West could do to try to help Haiti?
Oh, yes, there are many things that could be done. One thing, in the very immediate future, I'm talking about the next 6 or 7 months, is to try, and there has been some movement in that direction, to provide food. Because the population is really very, very hungry. But in the long term, one has to find something that goes beyond a Band-Aid and relief. And one of the things that I would hope for is that the United States, the French, and the Canadians would realize that the kind of economic strategy that they have to some extent imposed on Haiti is not the strategy that should be imposed. That they should, in fact, concentrate on the rural sector. They should give some protection to the rural sector in terms of tariffs, etc. And on the other hand, they should open up their own economies to Haitian goods, whatever Haiti can produce. In other words, lower tariffs for Haitian goods, or give a privilege and preferential treatment to Haitian local production, so that local production could be exported to the United States, Canada, and Haiti. And finally, to some extent, I think one of the things that most Haitians would want to see is to try to let those countries know that the help is welcome, but that they should not try to interfere continuously in Haitian politics itself.
Mm-hmm. Given the fact that now the agricultural sector in Haiti has fallen so far for a variety of reasons, coping with cheap imports, also environmental issues, things like erosion and bad weather and so forth, that we got to the point where we had a country that at one time was exporting food and now almost all the food has to be imported. I guess I find myself wondering what it would be possible, what Haiti has that could actually be a potential export.
Well, I think part of it would be export of some agricultural goods. If the economy is indeed geared towards the promotion of the rural sector. The other stuff that could, in fact, be done in Haiti is the existing strategy, that is to say that goods would be assembled in Haiti and there would be preferential treatment to receive those goods without penalty. There is an agreement, the so-called HERO agreement with the United States, but it doesn't affect all Haitian production. It affects a very small sector of the Haitian production. The other important thing to remember is that even though there is indeed a significant environmental crisis in Haiti, we do have one area, the plain of L'Artibonite, where it is still quite possible to restore significant agricultural production there. If irrigation works are done, if there is significant investment in clinics and primary schools in that area, I think L'Artibonite could in fact become what it used to be, the breadbasket of Haiti, and could indeed export some of it. But that requires a concerted effort on the part of the Haitian government and the international community to push for that type of economic development. And there are signs, apparently, that this may happen because some members of the IMF have declared very publicly recently that given the extent of the crisis in Haiti, and not just in Haiti, but focusing on Haiti, that they would now reconsider and might indeed promote the development of the rural areas and agricultural production.
As you mentioned earlier, there is now a UN peacekeeping force there in place in Haiti and has been, I think, since 1986. No, I'm sorry. That's not great. That's when Duvalier left.
It essentially started in 2004.
2004,
when
he
left. And then the Americans and the French left and the UN came under the interim government of La Tortue. Yeah.
So this is, and we're looking at about 7,000
soldiers. 7,000 to 8,000, yes.
All right, and there has been this attempt also to develop a kind of a domestic security force, certainly a Haitian police force. It would, though, if the United Nations left, what would happen?
Well, at the moment, I don't think that the government would ask the UN to leave because the situation is not stable enough. There is a police which is in the making, but it's a very long and difficult process. There have been talks now about whether or not there should be an additional military body, and it's not clear what it would be because, as I've said under Aristide, in the mid-1990s, the army, the military, were abolished. And the question is whether the army is going to come back or some sort of a coercive body would be reestablished, and it's not clear what will happen, given especially the current political crisis in Haiti, where we just have a new prime minister. Actually, he's not even the prime minister, he's the prime minister designated, and he has to be endorsed by parliament, and if that's the case, then all of those issues will come to the fore. Mm. But at the moment, it's highly unlikely that any Haitian government, in spite of a very strong feeling of nationalism, would ask the UN to leave. The situation is too precarious in terms of the stability of the country. There's been a wave of criminal activities and kidnappings. They've subsided, but it looks like they've started again.
We have a couple of minutes left. Here's a caller in Bloomington, Indiana, to talk with. Line number four. Hello.
Hello. To the guest, there is a documentary filmmaker by the name of Amy Serrano who just did a film released this last fall called Sugar Babies, The Plight of Dominican Republic and Haitian Workers. Have you seen this?
I have not seen it, but I intend to see it. And this is indeed a major problem in terms of the relationship between the two countries on the island. And what you're talking about is obviously the fact that Haitians go to the Dominican Republic and work in very nasty conditions on the sugar plantations in the Dominican Republic. There are very few rights, if any, and that has been a real thorn in the relationship between the two countries.
Yes. In fact, any of the listeners can just Google in that name, Amy Serrano, and well, not even Amy Serrano, but Sugar Baby's documentary film, and you see a clip of it. And, David, this would be a great person for you to invite as well.
All right. Thank you. Consider that. Very good. We're down to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left. I would expect that one of the things that has happened in Haiti, certainly over the last 10 years, perhaps, is that anyone who could leave, who had the possibility of leaving Haiti and making a better life elsewhere, did. To what extent has that complicated the business of trying to develop the country?
Well, there's been, to some extent, an exodus, obviously. But on the other hand, there are many Haitians who have stayed in Haiti, and they are trying to fix things. But it is indeed a real struggle. But there is the reality that, for instance, if you look at the statistics, there are more doctors, for instance, in Montreal, Haitian doctors in Montreal than Haitian doctors in Haiti. So that tells you the extent of the brain drain, as it were. Mm-hmm. And from another perspective, the diaspora has, to a large degree, sustained the country over the last 30 years or so because of their remittances. This has been really critical. So that people in Haiti, in particular, among the very poor, are not absolutely facing starvation. So there's been, it's estimated that something like $1.5 billion goes back to Haiti from the United States and Canada and other parts of the world where you have Haitians. So that has been a relief, as it were, for Haitians in Haiti.
Oh, that's a remarkable one, you say, for Haitians living in the United States elsewhere have sent back
about $1.5 billion
back, yeah. Back home.
And that tends it's very difficult to tell the exact statistics. Those are estimations because a lot of that money is sent back with people who simply go back to Haiti. So not all the money is transferred through, as it were, legal channels or to the banking system. So it's difficult to account for all the money. But there has been a significant amount of money sent by the diaspora, and that has sustained Haiti in those very troubled times.
Yeah. We're just about at the point where we have to finish. I think at the beginning your comment was, sadly correct, that it seems that whenever Haiti is in the news, it's not good news. We read about bad things, and certainly recently it's been in the news because there have been riots, literally, because food has become so expensive that people are starving, and they just can't afford for basic needs. It resulted in a pressure to a change in government, The government has said they're going to see what they can do here in the short term to try to lower the price of food. And you said in the short term also one thing that countries like the United States could do would be to provide food. But all of these are very short-term measures. And I guess I again find myself thinking about what is the possibility here for change for the better in the long term.
Well, I think Haiti will never be a very wealthy and fully industrialized country, but it can be a country which has a food production that could be self-sustaining. It could have a government which would be stable. In other words, we could have a very decent society, but this is going to take time. And as you said, we need to restructure the politics and the economics of Haiti if we are going to have that happy outcome. In the very short term, there is an opportunity because I think that the crisis that we've had over the past few weeks has really brought to the attention of the world the plight of Haiti and the plight of many third world countries. And I think it's a time to reassess old policies. It's a time also to see if there can be some international solidarity. And there has been some movement, indeed, in terms of changing some of the policies and changing the political system. So there are signs for hope, but they are still very timid signs. One should not be utterly pessimistic. But on the other hand, one has to be realistic.
Well, there we must stop. Our guest, Robert Fatin, is Julia A. Cooper Professor of Government and Foreign Affairs in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. Professor Fatin, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Have a good day.